Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the A New Day Show. I am the Queen of the Empowered Soul and I am your host this morning. I am so excited for this beautiful day, and as usual, I am broadcasting out of Brookfield, Connecticut, and we are experiencing a beautiful, beautiful morning. And I pray that you too are having a beautiful morning wherever you are. Well, our honored guest, Mr. Paul Lawrence Van, will be joining us at 11 a.m. because he has a family emergency which he is taking care of. And then he will be joining us for the second half of the show this morning. So we will show Paul a lot of love when he joins us. And for the first episode this morning, what I decide we will do together, we will be discussing some quotes for maintaining a powerful attitude. Because we know, especially now with what's going on, our result and the outcomes of whatever we do will be dependent a whole lot on our attitude. So I am working on getting the chat room up for the people who want to join us. Our call-in telephone number is 646-915-8166, and you can call me and we hopefully can have some powerful dialogue until Paul joins us in an hour. In the meantime, I would like to do a little housekeeping. I want to remind you that this Saturday, between the hours of 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., is when we will have the retreat slash workshop slash seminar, whichever word you want to use. Staying connected with your purpose during challenging times. And this event will take place at the Oratorio Little Way in Gaylardsville, Connecticut. The registration for that event is $75 per person. If you have a group of 10 or more, you can get it at $65 per person. If you want direction to the oratory, you can go on www.oratoryhealing.org. That's O-R-A-T-O-R-Y, healing.org, and you can find the directions there. To register for the event, which we are encouraging everyone to do, because we have limited seating, we want you to go to eventbrite.com, put the event in staying connected with your purpose during challenging times, and you can register there. If you have a group, then you can call me here at the office, 203-546-8210, and we will arrange for you to have your group rate. So if you have been off focus of what your real purpose is, or if you have no idea what it is, this event is for you. If you have been spending a lot of time discussing the big R word, which is not romance, and it's not relax, but recession, then this conversation and this event will be for you on Saturday the 20th. If you're looking to refuel yourself and your purpose, this event is for you. So I am praying that you will join me on Saturday, the 20th of June, at this powerful event. I will be joined by Prophet Daniels all the way from Massachusetts, and he is a powerful man of God. I was on a call with him a couple nights ago, and he is an amazing speaker. And he will have a lot of wisdom to pass on to you. I also would like you to pick up a copy of my book. You can do that on my website at www.clark-hudson.com. And just support me there. And also at the event. So again, the call-in number is 646-915-8166. And also, I want to remind you, listeners, that on the 24th, we will be having Dr. Miles Monroe, and I'm hoping that you will be able to join us. And I just want to give a shout out to my colleague, D.A. Williams. I guess he's coming back for Paul. So for the people who is in the chat room, just chime in the conversation. And as I said, we will be talking about maintaining a powerful attitude. And our guest will be joining us at 11 a.m. because he's looking about some family emergency. And you know that, you know, family is very important to us, and we need to always look at family. So we will be welcoming Paul when he gets here. So, you know, one of my favorite authors, with the exception of Dr. Miles Monroe, is John Maxwell. And John Maxwell says about attitude, he says, your attitude determines your action. Your action determines your accomplishment. And that is so true. Because too often we sit around and we complain and we complain and we complain. and all the energies that we are using to complain, if we would use that same energy and turn it around and take some action, then we would find out that our outcomes and our situation would be quite different. Because I'm sure you all know that the energy you send out and whatever you focus on, that is what will manifest itself. So find out, what does it take for you to maintain a good attitude? Because regardless of what's going on around us, we can make a difference if we choose to. So I've been telling a lot of people that, yes, I realize what's going on around me, but I have made a decision that I am going to reorganize and recreate the way I do things. I am focusing on investing more into my intellectual capital, so that when all that is happening is over, then I will have a positive story to share. So I want to share some of my favorite quotes this morning, and hope you will find a couple of nuggets or tools that you can put in your toolbox and find them useful in helping you maintain or develop a powerful attitude. Dale Carnegie says, "The successful man will profit from his mistakes and try again in a different way." And isn't that the truth? How many people do we know that make an attempt about something and they didn't get it just right, and then they just throw their arms up in the air and they have given up? You know, oh no, I'm not doing that anymore because I did it already. And nothing came, oh no, I'm not going to do that. Again, it is all in our attitude. All in our attitude. Vince Lombardi says, "It's not whether you get knocked down, it's whether you get up." You know, and my good friend and colleague Les Brown says it another way. Les says, "So if you fall down, so long as you're looking up, there is hope. There's always hope for you." So, you know, and even if you fall down and you are looking down, just spin over. If you are having difficulty turning over, ask somebody for help, because there is always someone to help you. John Maxwell says, "You are only an attitude away from success." Now, that puts the icing on the cake. If we would get up each day and we would think, you know, I'm on my way to success. Just one attitude. What a difference. What a difference this would make. William James says, "I have often thought that the best way to define a man's character would be to seek out the particular mental or moral attitude in which, when it came upon him, he felt himself most deeply and intensely active and alive." That is a wonderful, wonderful quote, because we all have life experiences, even though we are unique, but we all have life experiences. And each of us need to, you know, develop a checklist as a reminder of the experiences we have gone through and what are some of the lessons that we learn from them. You know, Proverbs 23 and verse 7 reads, "As he thinketh in his heart, so he is." Now, you know, a lot of times we step out to do things, and we oftentimes, especially when we are looking to achieve big goals or to set big goals, I know it happens to me, and I'm sure I'm not the one. Every time that you step out to do something new and something bigger than you have done before, you oftentimes hear the little voices telling you, "Oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, no, you are this, you are that. You ever know anybody who have done that?" And, you know, instead of thinking from your head, why not follow the advice here in Proverbs 23 and verse 7. "As he thinketh in his heart, so is he." Because our authentic thoughts and ideas come directly from our heart, because God plants them there for us to follow. Now, Walt Disney says, "All our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them." All our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. So, you know, what is this quote from Walt Disney telling you? Is that you can do anything because God already has given you the power and the ability to do things. And we don't always need to get the approval of others, our family members, our spouses, and all those, you know, those people who love us dearly. And they are trying their utmost best to protect us from whatever they see that is out there. They don't want us to hurt. And, okay, you know, a lot of times they are not doing it out of envy or malice. They are doing it because they love us and they care about us. But it comes a time when the desire on the inside of us, it is so strong that we need to just step out and take action. Again, if you're just joining us and you're wondering why is Daphne here talking by herself, our honored guest, Mr. Paul Lawrence Vann, will be joining us at 11 because he has a family emergency he is taking care of. But I thought to myself, what better way to spend this hour while I wait on Paul to join us than to go through some ways and give you some nuggets or food for thought around maintaining a powerful attitude. And the calling number is 646-915-8166. If you want to add to my conversation, I would greatly, greatly welcome you. So call me, and for the people in the chat room, I told you that Paul, okay, and my colleague and friend, Mr. D.A. Williams, another powerful, mighty man of God, he is in the chat room, and please feel free, D.A., to just chime in the conversation when you feel a desire to do so. Walt Emerson says, "What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters comparing to what lies between us, within us. You know, and isn't that the truth? When we look at what's on the inside, if we would just harness them and tap into that, what an amazing difference we would all make in this beautiful world that we share. You know, too often we let fear get in the place of our success and our progress. And a lot of times, there are a lot of people who exit this life without fulfilling their God-given talents and passion, and for the reason that God created them. So remember that you have nothing, absolutely nothing on the outside of you can compare to all the powerful things that God has placed on the inside of you. Another quote from John Maxwell said, okay, I think I told you that one already. Another one of my favorite quotes read, I may not be able to change the world I see around me, but I can change the way I see the world within me. Because, you know, too often, people are focusing on changing everyone and everything. However, focus on you, because once you start exuding all the positive energy, you're going to see such a difference around you. All of a sudden, everybody and the way they behave and their attitudes is going to be different, because you are putting out that energy that you expect to get back. We cannot direct the wind, but we can adjust our sails to attract the wind. And you know, if you speak with sailors, they will tell you that every time they go in their boats, they are not saying, "Oh, how much wind can I blow today?" They are looking, what direction should I adjust my sail in order to get the effect of the wind, in order to have a lovely sail. Another of my favorite quotes read, if you think you are beaten, you are. If you think you dare not, you don't. If you like to win but think you can't, it's almost certain you won't. So it is telling us, you have the power within. You know, you can design the plan you want. You can create it. It's like writing a recipe for your life and for what you want. You know, it is all in our attitude. Another one I love dearly reads, life's battles won't always go to the stronger or faster man, but sooner or later, the man who wins is the man who thinks he can. And isn't that the truth? You know, how often you find people out there who are practicing, and you know, people oftentimes say practice make perfect, and you know, honestly, I don't believe that. I strongly feel that practice makes improvement, because you always want to keep fresh and do your best always. And there's someone out there that just go with the determination. Nothing, absolutely nothing will get in my way today, and they just go out there and make things happen for themselves. David Brinkley says, a successful man is one who can lay a firm foundation with the bricks others have thrown at him. Oh, 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 this is so powerful because, you know, every day we get up, there have been, you know, there are solid bricks that are thrown at us. So instead of sitting down and being a victim, gather these rocks and start building. Start building. James Allen says, you are today where your thoughts have brought you. You will be tomorrow where your thoughts take you. So, you know, watch your thoughts, watch your thoughts, watch your thoughts, and watch your words. Because our words are powerful. And, you know, a lot of times we are our worst enemy. We sabotage ourselves because of the words that we continually speak into our own lives. Remember, you can call me if you want to contribute to my conversation. And if you're just joining us, we are waiting for honored guests. Mr. Paul Lawrence Van will be speaking on multiple streams of income and, you know, some of the things that the famous and well-to-do in order to attract multiple streams of income. He will be joining us at 11 a.m. because if you're just joining us, he had a family emergency that he's out taking care of. So we are going to show Paul a lot of love when he gets here. Now, Booker T. Washington says, I have learned that success is to be measured not so much by the position that one has reached in life, as by the obstacles which one has overcome while trying to succeed. So, what does success mean for you? You know, for each and every one of us, success means something different. So what I got from this quote by Booker T. Washington is that I need to concentrate on defining what does my success mean. And you know something? A lot of people confuse success with wealth. And I want to point out that it's two different things. You know, there are many people in life who are extremely successful, yet they are not wealthy. So what does success mean for you? Define that so you have a clear focus and a clear understanding as to how you can measure your success. A.W. Tozer says, our attitude toward things is likely to be more important than the things themselves. That is another powerful tool to put in your toolbox. Happiness depends not upon things around me, but on my attitude. Everything in my life will depend on my attitude. And that's a quote from Alfred A. Montepierre. You know, our attitude is important. And I know a lot of times you'll hear people use the word attitude in a negative connotation. They always say, well, what's your attitude with me? Not realizing that an attitude is a positive thing. So be careful how you use this word. And just make sure you understand that you need to portray the right attitude for the correct result. King Vider said, The quickest way to correct the fellow's attitude is to correct your own. And that just affirms what I had said earlier on about not focusing on changing others. However, all focus needs to go back to you. It's your attitude, not your altitude, that will determine your it's your attitude, not your aptitude, that will determine your altitude. And it is so true. You know, yes, things are going to be happening around us. Yes, we will encounter negative people in the next cubicle, but the kind of attitude we put out about these things will certainly make a difference. God chooses what we go through. We choose how we react to that. So in other words, they're always going to be stuff. Always going to be stuff going on around us. How do we react to them? You know, a pessimist is a person who, regardless of the present, is disappointed in the future. So try not, you know, to be one of those people. Don't be disappointed. Just find some means of gratitude in each experience that you encounter. You know, life is a journey. And a journey is, you know, look on if you decide you're going to go to Florida. Let's say I'm in Connecticut and I decide I want to drive to Florida for a vacation. Now, there will be different things which I encounter on my way down to Florida. Now, I can allow that to mess up my vacation, or I can make a difference to just embrace what happened, take a couple of deep breaths and say, well, how does this fit into all that is happening now? You know, so really, please do not get bent out of shape. William James says, the greatest discovery of our generation is that human beings can alter their lives by altering the state of their minds. So remember, you have those little things in the computer that you have been programmed over the years, and that you oftentimes hear going on. So remember, don't let those things get in your way. There's time when we got to just learn to say, oh, be quiet. Be quiet. You don't have any control over me. I have the control. So just be quiet. There is no wrong side of the bed we get up on. The wrong side of our mind, you know? You know, I'm laughing because years ago I used to work with a lady, and she always, it doesn't matter what time she comes in the office, she always just have the longest face. And this other lady used to ask her, what happened? You got up on the wrong side of the bed this morning? You know, and I always think, there's no wrong side of your bed, you know. So we got to just be careful. Just be careful of the way we use our words and our attitudes toward things. Well, Mr. Paul Lawrence Van will be joining us in 25 minutes. So We will be excited to have my brother and friend, Norman Vincent Peale says, believe you are defeated. Believe it long enough, and it is likely to become a fact. That's right. You think about it long enough, it's going to happen. It is going to happen. We got to learn to just guard our thoughts. We need to put up, in Jamaica, we have the burglar bars that you put on the window. I mean, I think we more use them for decoration than to prevent burglars, you know, because some people who never had a burglar, but these are beautiful, beautiful wrought iron work that is around the doors and on the patio and the windows and everything. Beautiful work. And I think that each and every one of us need to put some wrought on burglar bars around our thoughts and our hearts so that we can guard them from all the negativity that is out there. What really matters is what happens in us, not to us. So, you know, whatever happens, sit down, dissect that situation, and ask yourself this question: what did I learn from this? What did I learn from this? And you will sure find a lesson in there. The reason we oftentimes miss the lesson is because of fear, and we get into a panic mode, and we are afraid to look at the situation because we are so scared. Every man takes the limits of his own field of vision for the limits of the world. That's one of my favorite quotes. And if you're just joining us, the reason why I am here talking with myself and sharing some food for thought for maintaining a powerful attitude is because our honored guest will be joining us in the second episode. So in 22 minutes, we will be joined by Mr. Paul Lawrence Vann, who will be speaking about multiple streams of income and giving us some more valid insights and tools and how we can do that. Very little is needed to make a happy life. It is all within yourself, in your way of thinking, and in your attitude. And that's a quote by Fred Corbett. You know, we have it all if we would only act in the right manner. Others can stop you temporarily, but you are the only one who can do it permanently. So if it is to be, it is up to me. And that needs to be your affirmation. Every day when we step through the door, wherever we are going, we need to make a decision. If it needs to be, it is up to me. We are in the driver's seat. So long as we have the right attitude, it is up to us. Man must cease attributing his problem to his environment and learn again to exercise his will. Man must cease attributing his problems to his environment and learn again to exercise his will. Never look back unless you want to go that way. So, yes, whatever happens in your life happened, but learn to put it in the archive. Learn from that and move ahead. Forge ahead. What can you find in that situation that will catapult you forward? We lost because we told ourselves we lost. You know, too often you hear people say, you know, oh, why am I going to do that? I'm no good at that. So then, if that's what you tell yourself, that you are no good at that, that's exactly what's going to happen. You will fail at it, and then that was an affirmation, but you had spoken it in your life before you step out there. So again, watch your words and your attitudes. Be careful for nothing. Prayerful for everything. Thankful for everything. You know, gratitude, gratitude, gratitude. It doesn't matter how small a thing. Always give thanks. You know, always give thanks. Too often we forget to give thanks for the little things. You know, I was having a conversation with a gentleman the other day, and it's someone I've known for a long time, and I was speaking to him about some things I heard that was going on at his job and his contribution to that and all of that. And he said to me, oh, well, that's just a job. I'm not going to let it get to me and everything. I said, well, you know something? That's the job that is providing a roof over your head, food in your refrigerator, gas in your car. So you need to have a better attitude about it, because a lot of people really don't have a job now. So seeing that you have one, you ought to take better care of it. I'm not looking to say when you get a bigger job and a better job according to you, paying you more money and all of that, that's when you're going to start to do better. Because you know what? If you're not doing right in the one you have now, you are not going to be doing right in the other one, because your negative attitude and the way you treat your team, mates, and all of that, that's going to be part of who you are. So until you change your attitude about your conduct, don't expect to attract a better position. Places and circumstances never guarantee happiness. You must decide within yourself whether you want to be happy. So, Robert J. Hastings is telling us that happiness is an inside job. So, you know, pull that blanket off of you right now. Go get a shower, take a shampoo your hair, and finding that your spouse is not treating you right and staying under the blanket all day. Get up and be happy, because you have the power within you to be happy. Henry Ford says, failure is only the opportunity to begin again more intelligently. So, you see, if at first you don't succeed, you try, and try again. Action and feeling go together. And by regulating the action, we can directly regulate our feelings. And that's food for thought given to us by William James. Abraham Lincoln says, always bear in mind that our resolution to succeed is more important than any other thing. So, what kind of a resolution you have? You know, this, I am praying that by me passing on these different tools to you this morning, that it will help you to design a checklist to really honestly look at where your attitude is. Vince Lombardi says, the quality of a person's life is in direct proportion to their commitment to excellence, regardless of their chosen field of endeavor. Okay? Colossians 3:23 reads, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men. So, this just go back to what I just said a couple seconds ago about the person I know at the job, and just he didn't think, because it's not the quote unquote dream job that he has, that he should be doing his best there. So we need to know that it doesn't matter what we do, sweeping the street, mowing the lawn, being an accountant, being the CEO, we are doing something that represents God the Father. So focus on that and know that we are not representing ourselves, but we are representing the Most High. The man who acquires the ability to take full possession of his own mind may take possession of anything else to which he is justly entitled. Again, you got the power to make the difference in your life. And 12 minutes, we will be joined by my colleague and friend and our honored guest, Mr. Paul Lawrence Van. The chat room is up, and the call-in number is 646-915-8166. Nothing is as hard as it looks. Everything is more rewarding than we expect. And if anything can go right, it will. And at the best possible moment. You know, they always say God doesn't work on our timetable, but hey, he is always on time. So just have an attitude that whatever to be, it will be at the correct time. Helen Keller says, I thank God for my handicaps. Through them, I have found myself, my work, and my God. And, you know, for those of you who don't know who Helen Keller is, she is a blind lady. Let me rephrase that. She is a lady who has no sight, but she has a lot of vision, so she's really not blind, because she is doing much more powerful work, and she has an amazing attitude over us that has our sight, you know. John Maxwell says, where there is no hope in the future, there is no power in the present. So, you know, this is just so wonderful this morning. I am so thankful that I was able to share these thoughts with you. And I pray that you have learned something. In 10 minutes, Our honored guests should be joining us, so we have a few more minutes to go here and to go through some more. Success is peace of mind in knowing you did your best. So for each person, you know, our success is more. Our success is not measured by what others are doing, but through our attitude and our the way we feel within our heart. You know, nobody asks you to do anything other than your best. And who knows your best? You know your best. Because a lot of time people are trying to take shortcuts because no human eyes are watching them. But know that you have greater eyes that are watching you. So don't too get worried over the eyes. We have what we call conscience and all of that. And God is always watching you. Remember that we are representing our Heavenly Father. Anyone who stops learning is old, whether at 20 or 80. Anyone who keeps learning stays young. And that's another nugget from the famous Henry Ford. So in other words, you know, a lot of times I tell people that our investment in our intellectual capital is supposed to supersede the investment in our wardrobe. But a lot of people tend to focus on the stuff around them instead of what's inside of them. The attitude of the individual determines the attitude of the group. So, you know, a lot of times I am teaching team development and empowerment, and I always tell people, if you have somebody with a stinking attitude as part of your group, you got to nip it in the bud, because this thing festers and festers, and you got to get rid of it, because before you know it, it's going to be an epidemic in the team. So when you see something that's not right, you know, you got to stop it. Stop it right in the beginning before you get everybody infested. I firmly believe that any man's finest hour, his greatest fulfillment to all he holds dear, is that moment when he has worked his heart out in a good cause and lies exhausted on the field of battle victoriously. And that's a quote by Vince Lombardi. And, you know, I'm praying that this will help you to develop your own thoughts too, and share them, your own quotes that has helped to change your life, so that somebody can read them to further change the way that others will be thinking in the future. Don't let yourself worry when you are doing your best. Hurry when success depends on accuracy. Think evil of anyone until you have the facts. Believe a thing is possible without trying it. You know how often people, you go to a new job or a new church or something, and somebody always tell you, oh, this one is nice and that one is nice, but ooh, you see that one over there, stay away from them. And you know, when people tell me that, the first thing I do is reach out to the person they warned me about. Because I honestly and truly want to have my own experience. Let me find out for myself what the person is like, and we can take it from there. Because we as individuals have our unique encounters, and I would not like to be assessed by other people based on my encounter with somebody else that had nothing, absolutely nothing to do with them. So develop your own experiences with others and do not assess people by what others are telling you. Well, it's countdown time. It's 4 minutes, and we are hoping that our honored guests will be calling in at any moment now. So, I am not sure all happy people are generous, but I've never seen a generous person who wasn't happy. Isn't that the truth? You know, that is, and that's a quote from an anonymous person, but it is so true. Nothing can stop the man with the right mental attitude from achieving his goal. Nothing on earth can help the man with the wrong mental attitude. So if your attitude ain't right, you ain't got nothing, absolutely nothing going for you. Yogi Berra says, life is like a basketball. It's 95% mental and the other half is physical. Isn't that the truth? Even the ball players know that. If you want to change attitudes, start with a change in behavior. In other words, begin to act the part as well as you can of the person you would rather be, the person you most want to become. Gradually, the old fearful person will fade away. And that's a quote from from Dr. William Glazer, and I think our honored guest has joined us, and my last quote this morning will be, attitude determines action. You are not what you think you are, what you think you are. So remember that. Those are some nuggets that will help to maintaining a powerful attitude. And if you have not yet have a powerful attitude, it will help you to get one. Well, good morning, Mr. Van. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Daphne. How are you doing this morning? I am doing wonderful.
I am just so blessed to have you on, and our colleague, Mr. D.A. Williams is with us this morning, and I'm praying that your family situation has all sorted out and that it will work for the best.
Yes, thank you very much, and I want to say good morning to D.A. as well. Good morning, D.A. I hope you're doing great also.
All right. So, I must tell you, I knew you had some points you wanted to get to me, but I don't know whether you had gotten them to me because I don't have them in my position. However, I know we're going to rock and roll because you have some amazing information to pass on to us. And you know, Paul, you are such a talented, gifted, and blessed man. And I'm just so thankful for God for really planting you in my life. And I am just going to nurture this relationship because I want it to really flourish. So I hope the listeners appreciate you as much as I do. Now, this morning, Paul, I know everybody knows who you are and all of that because you have an amazing show on, but would you just take a few minutes, please, sir, and tell the listeners a little bit about what you want to tell them this morning that you have not told them before, because we actually had you on the show before.
Yes, and thank you very much again, Daphne. Thank you for having me on your great show, A New Day Show. I'm honored to be here again, and I want to share something new today with all the listeners, those that are presently on, like great people like D.A. Williams. He's not a good man. He's a great man. Like you, Daphne, Dynamic Daphne, you're not a good person. You're a great person. So what I want to say to everyone is good morning. I'm honored to be here. And what I'm going to talk about today is how people can create multiple streams of income by establishing a nonprofit organization. So I'll be talking about grants. I'll be talking about the process. I'll be talking about some trends that are being set by some famous people we all know. And I'll also be showing people and telling people how they can do the same thing. I think that pretty much will take up most of that time, and I'm looking forward to getting right into it.
Okay, great, Paul. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing, because I'm excited about that too, because you know a lot of ordinary people, and I use that word lightly, they think that a nonprofit is for the privileged few. And what I have learned from you and others, it's not. It's there for everybody who understands about utilizing that and how to start that. So why don't we start at the beginning?
Okay.
You know, what does it take to start a nonprofit? Are there some requirements and, you know, special education, all of that? What does it take to start a nonprofit?
Well, Daphne, that is the right question to ask, and I'm glad that you did ask it. I'm going to repeat it for the listeners out there, and it is, how does one go about starting a nonprofit? And you're absolutely correct. Grants are not just for the privileged few. They're for everyone, and the reason why they're for everyone is because the government cannot do everything by themselves. In other words, the government would not know if there are problems in your community unless someone made them aware of it. So part of what grants entail is taking problems, and this it's the genesis of what grants is all about. It's taking problems and nonprofit organizations finding solutions for those problems to remedy the problems, to make them well, so that we can have very viable and strong communities in which we live. Because in essence, that's what this journey is all about. It's about us providing those livable communities throughout the United States. Now, how do people get started? Before I talk about that, I'm going to talk about what I mentioned earlier about trendsetters. And what I meant by that is that Oprah Winfrey, she, of course, has a for-profit called Harpo that she manages the Oprah Winfrey Show from. And she also works with the Angel Network. So she has a successful for-profit and a very successful not-for-profit organization. Let's go one step further. We have Bill Gates. Everybody knows about Microsoft because we're using his software right now.
Yep.
He had Microsoft, but he also leads the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which has $66 billion of assets in that particular nonprofit portfolio. So if people don't think that they can really prosper and increase their bottom line through grants and through nonprofits, I beg to differ. So how does one get started is the next question that you ask. How does one get started? What's required and what must people do to do that? The first thing that a person has to do when they decide to form a nonprofit organization is to sit down and map out exactly what they're passionate about. It's just like when people talk about their career. What area are you passionate about? Is it homelessness? Is it hunger? Is it excessive medical bills, affordable bills? Is it housing? Is it transitional housing? There has to be some problems out there. Now, the top three problems is food. In America, because people have lost their jobs, You see tent cities all over the United States, which is unbelievable for the 21st century. And so we need more food. We need more food pantries. The second thing is a lot of people have lost their homes due to mortgage foreclosure. And they lost their houses, so they need affordable housing, transitional housing. So we're looking at apartments, commercial apartment buildings. We're looking at mobile homes. We're looking at something or some source where people can actually live. And then thirdly, we look at the number one reason why most people have foreclosed on their mortgages, 68% is the result of excessive medical bills. Someone got sick, they got injured, they got hurt, and they ended up in the hospital and exorbitant medical bills, and that caused them to lose their house. 68% is the percentage that we come up with. So when we look at that, what happens is we have to, first of all, identify what our mission is going to be. I'll use an example. My mission is to provide 21st century financial literacy to low-income youth and their families so that they will become financially fit. And that is my particular mission. How did I go about forming the nonprofit? And this is for everybody. I want everybody to be taking notes now. The number one thing is come up with your area of focus. Mine is financial literacy. I use that as an example. Number two, what is the name of your foundation? We're going to name that foundation because we want to put some definition on it. I was lost for thought, so I just decided the Paul Lawrence Vann Foundation. I didn't have to think about it that much. Just put it in my name. And since I have a son and he's named after me, then he'll have to deal with it years later, right?
That's right, because it becomes a legacy.
That's right. It becomes a legacy, and that's what nonprofit organizations are all about. Number three, the third thing that people should look at is forming a board of directors. And let me explain this, because this is the most crucial part of establishing a nonprofit organization. You put people on your board who are capable and willing to go out and raise funds for you. That is the purpose of the board of directors. It's not for the board of directors, member of the board of directors, to draw a check, but it's for them to generate money to help you carry out your vision. And on that, you have to decide who is going to be the chairman. Well, I'm the chairman of the Paul Lawrence Vann Foundation. Who is going to be the president? Who is going to be the treasurer? Who is going to be the secretary? Who, in fact, and they're all part of the leadership structure. Now, the part of the execution, the operations structure, is the executive director. You have a program manager. You can have also a lot of volunteers, and you can get volunteers from organizations in your own community for free, so you don't have to pay for it. So we set up that board of directors. Then we're going to have a meeting for the board of directors. Once people agree and sign on to be on the board, then you write your bylaws, and your bylaws are how you're going to operate your nonprofit. Will you, in fact, hire staff, an executive director, an assistant? Are you going to bring in volunteers, and how are you going to do it? So you outline each and every item in terms of how you're going to operate. And then, most importantly, in the bylaws, you must state how are you going to execute your program, because the key word is deliverables. How are you going to deliver that financial literacy program? How are you going to deliver that food to the hungry and the affordable housing to the homeless? And so you also have to look at exactly how you're going to deliver these particular services. The next thing that you're going to look at doing, of course, is incorporating your nonprofit. And you're going to incorporate it by, number one, you're going to have to, of course, go to your local officials. For example, I would go to Baltimore, and they have a taxation and assessment office, and I would go to them, and they also set up corporations, and I would pay them the fee, and the fee varies according to what state or what locality you live in, and you would file that paperwork on a local level. You would call the Internal Revenue Service to get a form SS-4, and that form SS-4 is going to give you your federal employee identification number. The next thing that you're going to do is to, of course, get yourself a Form 1023, and that Form 1023 is a form that's going to provide you with the opportunity to provide your paperwork to the Internal Revenue Service because they manage the nonprofit organizations, and that's where most people encounter the most problems because they're intimidated by the paperwork. They're overwhelmed with the paperwork, but if they hire someone who has expertise in that and know how to read the fine print and know how to navigate federal government policy, then it's not a problem. It's not a problem. And then the next thing is you have to wait for the approval. Now, a lot of people always ask this particular question, Daphne, and the question they ask mostly is, well, how long is it going to take? And then my answer to everyone is be patient. And the reason why I say be patient, if you've waited your whole life to establish this nonprofit, why do you want to rush this process? Make sure and ensure that you provide the proper documentation because the IRS is going to ask you questions, and they're going to assign you to a case manager. They're going to ask you a question. They asked me this question. Well, you're going to be delivering financial literacy to the Ask the School program. Exactly how are you going to manage the credit piece? You're going to be talking about credit reports, credit scores, et cetera. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And they said, well, we believe that you are. And I said, I'm going to talk about credit and what credit means, but I'm not going to be looking at anyone trying to help them to increase their score. I said, after all, these are young children that are not employed. And I know they're not employed because their parents aren't employed either. Because the low income, see?
Right.
And so, but that was the overriding issue, sticking point for my application. So what I did, I have a good friend who's written a book about credit and about finances, and I said, I'm going to call upon her to come out and deliver that piece of it. And once I said that, I received my paperwork in the mail.
That's
and
right.
So that was a sticking point. So my response to everyone is how long it's going to take. How long it's going to take is not necessarily predicated on you not filling your paperwork out right. It's predicated on if the Internal Revenue Service is not overwhelmed with these hundreds of thousands of requests for tax-exempt nonprofit organizations. They're so overwhelmed, so many people are applying. And let me go back to what I was saying earlier. And now let me tell you what exactly about this trendsetter thing I mentioned earlier with Oprah Winfrey and Bill Gates.
Paul.
Yes.
Just give me a minute. I want to piggyback on a couple things you said before you move on.
Okay.
You mentioned about action in foreign nonprofit, and I was very happy that you say that because I live in an area of the country where a lot of agencies and individuals will create programs just to get funding because there are some people doing the same program and they are competing for the same dollars. So I was glad that you point out that your passion plays an important role in all of this and creating a program.
Yes.
So I just wanted to piggyback on that. Would you go ahead, please?
Sure, not a problem. And I'd like to talk about that just a bit in terms of the passion. I'm going to give you an example. I actually started working on grants when I was in high school because I was very poor. I was very poor. My mom and dad worked every day of the week, and they had a small family grocery store in our neighborhood, but they didn't make a lot of money. And of course, I'm one of 10 children. And so when it came time to graduate from high school, what happened to me is I didn't have any money. So I started applying for grants, Pell grants. And that, of course, Senator Pell from Rhode Island. And I applied, and I was able to receive grants for 4 years because I was in poverty. I was poor. And what happened is I was learning grants then, but I really didn't know it. I just said, I'm getting money to go to college. Fast forward a few years later, I'm working in the United States Air Force in Dayton, Ohio, at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, right there where D.A. Williams is. And I spent 4 years there, and I learned about contracts because I worked on billion-dollar programs for the United States Air Force. I worked with defense contractors, and a contract is a grant. Once you go to an organization, for example, if you were to go to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and you apply for a grant for, let's say, a library, that would be a contract between the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and your nonprofit organization. That's a contract. Money has been distributed to you in the form of a grant. But they're one and the same. It's only how they're distributed. That's the only difference. So I'm going to just say to everyone who's listening, if, in fact, you decide to establish a nonprofit organization, you must be passionate about it, because if you think the money's just going to fall in your lap, it's not going to happen. There is due diligence, just as if we were to purchase a house, you would have due diligence to find out whether there were cracks in the wall, cracks in the foundation, or anything else. The same thing holds true for a grant. There must be due diligence applied to grants. And, yes, I love what you stated earlier, Daphne, about different nonprofit organizations who happen to be competing for the same grant funding. Well,
yes.
My response to that is that's I think, a somewhat of competition, but it really isn't, because your mission, you and I could be both doing financial literacy, but I know your mission is going to be different from mine, because we're different people, and we would put our business model together in a different format. And so our deliverables are going to be different. Our audience is going to be different. So even though people have similar nonprofit organizations and they are vying for part of this $360 billion annual distribution, it's totally different because your board of directors is different, your mission statement is different, the IRS recognizes being different. If they were the same, the IRS would not issue that non-tax-exempt status.
Okay.
So that is definitely one area I know that it sounds as though it's competitive, but it really isn't. And again, the difference.
Okay, thank you for that bit of information, because I am always assessing it by their programs.
Sure.
You know, I wasn't really looking. They can structure their mission statement differently. So that really shows creativity on their part.
Yes.
Because although they're doing the same program, their mission statement and vision and outmarks and outcomes and benchmarks and things like that can be different, which allow them to be successful in receiving the funding. So
absolutely.
That is good stuff you passing out there, my brother.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, before you continue, I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
Let's say, well, for example, you are a profit business and you are a nonprofit business.
Yes.
And you have a nonprofit.
Yes.
Are you allowed to give donation to your own nonprofit from your profit business?
I'll repeat that question for people who are listening. Are you able to make contributions from your for-profit to your nonprofit and vice versa, correct?
Not vice versa. Just one way. If I, for example, the Paul Lawrence Van Foundation.
Sure. Yeah, this is
profit
yes.
business give donation to Paul Lawrence Foundation.
Yes, that's a very great question, and I'll answer it for you this way. Everything dealing with the Internal Revenue Service and our taxes, and, of course, nonprofit is you don't pay any taxes. For-profits, you do pay tax. There must be a point of reasonableness. In other
yes.
words, if you were paying a salary, let's say if I was paying myself a salary for the work that I did to actually lead my nonprofit organization. If I had a salary of $200,000 to $300,000, basically you get ready to go to jail, because because that particular salary is not commensurate with the average salary for someone who is the chairman of a nonprofit.
Yes,
you can almost
yes.
go to the website salary.com and just put in a basic search about how much I should pay you as an executive director, or how much I would pay you as a assistant to the executive director or to the board of directors, and that's how it's done. So, yes, you can do that, but there must be a point of reasonableness, and the particular service that is provided must be directly related to it. And if it's not, here comes that audit, and no one likes an audit. I'm a tax guy. I have 40 hours of tax accounting in my background. I've audited companies for Mobile Oil Company when I worked for them years ago. I used to be a financial analyst for Mobile. I conducted audits with Price Waterhouse, the accounting firm. And so there must be that point of reasonableness. And what happens a lot of times is people receive the grant money, which you never have to pay back. And what they found out is they abuse the privilege, and they go a little crazy with the money, and that's when they get into trouble.
That's right. So people got to do the homework.
You have to do your homework.
And make sure you follow your passion. Don't follow greed.
Right. Don't follow greed.
When
you know,
you're doing it for the right reason, you're not going to fall into trouble. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's right. And Daphne, one of the things I want to say to people on the line is the great thing about grants is, number one, you apply for the grants, and as I was stating earlier, once we get that non-tax-exempt status from the IRS, then we apply for grants, and then we start executing our program or providing deliverables for why we exist. But what people need to realize is when it comes to grants, there is no credit check involved. People don't check your credit. So a lot of people think, well, my credit is bad. I can't do this. It has nothing to do with grants. Number two, when it comes to grants, people might think of it as being like a business loan, but it's not. You never have to pay the money back. Now, there are cases where if you receive a 4 or 5 year windfall of grant funding from a organization or a government agency, for example, let's say if you receive the money from the Department of Education, and in the second year or first year, for example, you don't spend all the money that you receive, let's say it's $1 million, then if the Department of Education decided they want to you to return that money, you would have to return that part you didn't spend. Just to let people know that. But if you're running a very successful nonprofit, there will be no money left. You understand what I'm saying?
That's right. That's right, because you have those guidelines that set out with the board of directors.
Right.
To keep watch and to make sure everything is running effectively. Paul,
sure.
Are there fees for filing this paperwork with the IRS?
Yes, a great question.
And I
great
know
question.
Maybe each state is different.
Yes, that's a great question, but there are fees that are involved. For example, if a person is filing for their business name, there may be a small fee there. Of course, people can find this information out with their Secretary of State. There's typically in your state a Secretary of State, and they manage the business side of things for the governor. And you would look at their particular website. So for what they have in Ohio, Connecticut, and Maryland would be totally different than what they have in California. They all vary according. So if you're getting that name, then number two, if you're filing for incorporation as a nonprofit, there's a fee for that. Let's say that fee is $300.
Yes.
Let's see, it might be $25, and I'm just ballparking it primarily because it's going to differ wherever you go. And then what you're going to look at is you have it incorporated. Then some of the other fees that are involved up front is you want to set up a bank account because you need the money to deposit that money somewhere, right, in that business bank account. So you need that. You're going to need a website. You're going to have a nice little website, and you want a website where you can put the to be able to collect the donations on that site. So I don't know. Some people use PayPal. There's also a program out there called Just Give. It's another one of those really nice programs where people can go into it, and it does the transactions for you. So, there are some fees, and then if people were to contract to have someone to do that, so if someone were to hire a nonprofit organization to help them structure it, there would be some fees for establishing the nonprofit, there may be some fees for the research, grant research, and then for grant writing itself. But
right.
When you decide to hire someone to do that, make sure you check the references and ensure also that you get what you ask for, because that's very important.
Paul.
Yes.
Does one need an attorney to do all of this, or this is something that you can sit and patiently accomplish with the expertise of an attorney?
Now, what I love about the question that you have, Daphne, and I'm going to respond this way, is that you want an attorney who has an expertise at grants. You can't
mm-hmm.
get just any kind of attorney. You need one, like if you got an attorney for real estate, you want an attorney who actually has experience in real estate. And there are lawyers who have expertise in real estate just as they do in grants. That's if
right.
you choose to do it, but you don't have to. I did all of mine myself, but that's the type of person I am. After 20
right,
years.
You've
right.
been doing it. So
I've been doing it for 20 some
years.
You
have expertise from you were a teenager.
Right, since a teenager. So I would say for people who really don't like paperwork, and I have a lot of customers who just can't stand the paperwork, but they love the grant money, and they say, well, you
oh,
do this
Lord,
for me.
Oh, Lord, you're talking to one of
yeah, they asked okay. me, would you help me establish this? I said, sure. And I point them. I have clients in Detroit, Michigan. I have clients in California, here in Maryland. So I have clients, and I just picked up a client over in Arizona just a couple of days ago. And because I conducted a grant, a teleseminar Monday evening, so I picked up someone from that. So a lot of it just comes down to you just have to know what you're doing, and you just have to look to make sure that the person, people you hire, they're very ethical, because that
yes.
goes a long way.
Yes. You know, earlier on you had mentioned that people are asking how long it takes. Isn't it amazing, Paul, how much microwave results people expect?
That's very
true. You
know, true.
People are not looking about the advantage of what they are looking to establish and the delivery. But the first question they want to ask, how long it takes.
Right.
Anything that is worthwhile takes time.
It absolutely does take time. And what I always like to tell people is this. Are you ready to provide your deliverables to your target market? I can easily identify my target market. I know DA can identify his. You can identify yours. Mine,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to grants, are low-income youth that are in
right.
poverty, youth that don't look like they have hope. So I'm going to give them some hope. And what happens
mm-hmm.
when a child, when they discover personal financial management from what we call financial literacy, they save more money over the course of their life. In fact, there's a summit being held today in Washington, D.C., of which I was going to attend, but I'd rather be on a New Day show, so I didn't go.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank
yes.
you, thank you.
And there are people from all over the world that are at this summit. It is one of the, I think, the largest summit they ever had on financial literacy in the history of the world. It's the largest they've ever had. But I can get it on the webcast, so I've been looking at it part of the morning. I'll look at it after the call. And what has happened, for example, again, when we start to look at some things people need to do, I tell people also be ready to collaborate. And what I mean by get ready to collaborate is I don't want anyone on this call to think they have to do everything by themselves. The nature
of no lone rangers.
Right, we're no lone rangers, but the nature of grants is collaboration. It is working with another nonprofit. I'm partnered right now with 20 other nonprofits because a lot of nonprofits are going out of business because they're trying to do everything themselves.
That's
and what
right,
I'm doing,
and that's selfish.
Right, and what I'm doing is partnering with 20 others. We're going after a $1.1 million grant, and we will likely get it because we've partnered because we have so many people with different expertise. And so instead of
right.
being competitive, we're actually become our mutual partners because we want to strengthen the community, and that's really what grants is all about. So collaboration is really one of the key words that people should always look at. Not only collaborate with other nonprofits, but also with corporate partners, with
exactly.
different
and for,
associations.
And for profit or businesses out there, because a focus and emphasis should be around the people that we are providing the service for, not our selfish desires.
Exactly. That's absolutely correct.
We are 30 minutes into the segment, sir.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Please, at this time, let people know how to get in touch with you, and especially about the grant program and everything. How can they contact you to utilize that?
Sure, I'd love to do that, and thank you for asking. People can, of course, get me on my website, which is www.paullawrence.com. That's paullawrencevan.com. They can also get me on email. I'm going to give you my best email address because I have another one. The server is having a few difficulties now because I probably need to delete some emails, but it's paulvann, P-A-U-L-V-A-N-N, 2, and then at comcast.net. So that's paul2@comcast.net. And then my phone number is area code 240-416-5077. And I have links off of my primarily website, and I also list, I'm going to actually be conducting another teleseminar this Saturday from about 10 till 11:30, and it's going to be creating multiple streams of income through nonprofits, and it's going to be just 90 minutes.
Would you repeat the phone number for me so I can put it in the chat room, please?
Sure, that will be area code 240.
416-5077. Thank you.
Okay.
I have that up, and I have the email up in the chat room. Thank you.
Okay. And
all right, go ahead.
Okay. So one of the other things that I definitely want to talk to people about is are their ideas, their programs, and their projects going to be. I think that's very critical. And the reason why I want to come back to this is because once we come up with our decision, we need to start focusing on some of the key, what I consider, areas to go into. Now, I already mentioned food pantries because people are starving. Multimillionaires are starving, and they're starving because they've lost everything. Food shelters, they can't keep food in there because the donations have dropped off because people have lost their jobs. But you have to be creative. People have to be creative. Affordable housing, another huge, huge area. Financial literacy, because right now what was announced today is that financial literacy is going to be spread throughout all of America and the world. Everyone is going to get it. They're going to get it in elementary school, middle school, high school, colleges, businesses, everybody. It's going to get it, and it's going to be free. But all people are not going to be aware of it. So there's still opportunities to do that. Youth mentorship, entrepreneurship. Here's the big one, green options, green building, green energy, green carbon footprint. Huge, huge business. Healthcare, of course, we know there's healthcare reform that's been that's being considered right now by President Obama, so that's huge. Senior programs, because the baby boomers are retiring, and a lot of them are coming out of retirement because of this economy, but the programs are still needed because people are still aging. Women empowerment programs, and then programs that are minority-focused. So those are some of the ideas, program, and projects for consideration, but there are so many more, the humanities, the arts. You pretty much can think about anything, and you can actually set up a nonprofit for it. But I like for people to just focus on the problem areas.
Yes, Paul.
Yes.
You know, a lot of times I get email, and there are so many people telling you about how they can get you grants.
Yes.
Based on your expertise and knowledge, do you think those people who are sending out the email that have those books they want you to buy to get the grants, do those things work?
I love that question, and I have a response for that. A lot of the organizations that you see that are publicizing that are simply their salespeople and their marketing people. And
I just completed
a report. I do work as a volunteer for the governor of Maryland, Governor
yes.
O'Malley. And so I'm pretty close to the pulse with, for example, the financial regulation division within the state, and also the commissioner for finances, also the comptroller office in the state of Maryland. I just had a meeting with them last week, and I'm just
mm-hmm.
a volunteer. But by volunteering, I learned so much. And what I focused on, I just wrote a report that's going to go to the governor on mortgage scams, on microloan
yes.
scams, for small business, and also on tax scams. So I'm following this, and what I'm telling the people is when you see advertising that sounds too good to be true, guess what?
It is.
It is. Exactly.
It is. It
and
is.
So there is, I have people sending me a lot of advertisement on the email. I have phone calls, and they want to sell you this material, but you still have to do the work, irregardless if you purchase
That's
it.
That's right.
You still have to do the work, and they're not going to tell you how to do it.
That's
and
right.
That's what I want to tell the people. Be aware of false advertisement, because false advertisement equals fraud. A lot of people, hardworking people who are really trying, are being scammed, and that's a scam, a lot of it. The people that are not involved in it are not doing it. They're salespeople and they're marketers.
That's right.
So that's
there
part
too
of
many
it.
People are getting taken.
Yeah, they're
that
getting
thing,
taken.
You know?
Exactly.
They're getting taken.
Exactly. And there are some very legitimate out there as well. I'm not saying all of the organizations that you see, but, you know, you can, what they say, confirm and verify is the term.
That's right. Do your research.
Right.
Before
do your research.
You invest any money in them.
Exactly.
So do your research.
Exactly.
I had a question. When you're considering a board of directors, and this is just a generic question.
Sure.
Does all your board of directors need to be local to you? Part A. Part B, how often do you recommend that the board of directors meet?
Excellent question. The response to the first question is, with the board of directors, do they all have to be local? The answer to that is absolutely not. In fact, this young man who's holding this summit today, he, in fact, lives here in the Los Angeles area, but he has people on his board, Colin Powell and a whole lot of other folks, and Colin Powell lives in Virginia. So they can be in another location. Now, the second part of that, I believe you're asking, how often should they meet? Is that it?
Yes. Yes.
That's all determined by the bylaws. When you write your bylaws and you decide, do you meet quarterly? Do you meet biannually? Do you meet monthly? So that's all determined by the people who are actually leading it, and you write that in your bylaws. And when you hold the meetings, the board meetings, you must maintain the minutes, because in case the IRS asks you about some of the expenses that are on your books, they could still take a look at, because you still have to file what's called a Form 999.
Yes.
Form 990. And in that form, you're still outlining where your money's going, even though you're not paying expenses on it. So for people who think they're going to get money, you don't have to report. Trust me, you have to report. Yeah, so that's a great question, but it's all dictated by the bylaws that are established at your very first board meeting.
Yes, Paul, our board of directors paid personnel?
It can be either or. Sometimes the board members, they don't take a fee. They volunteer their services because they're passionate about your vision. You have like-minded people. And then in other cases, depending on how you structured, if you can afford to pay board members, you can. I did request some people I knew that had expert experience. For example, I was going to bring on another young man who was an excellent contractor. And this fellow is warranted by the federal government, but he wanted a salary. And I told him,
wow.
I said, well, what about your involvement? What about your vision for helping these youth? And he wasn't so enamored by that, so I didn't bring him on the board, because he was just looking at what was in it for him. You have to have
exactly.
people on your board
exactly.
that are
so
committed.
So he was about adding value.
Right. He wasn't about adding value. He was looking at it from a personal standpoint, and that's not what the grant world is all about. It's really about strengthening the community. And you live in the same, and he lived in the same community, and he knows what the problems are, so let's fix some of these problems. But he was looking at it more from a standpoint of what's in it for me, and, and what's in it for you can come down the road. I mean, it can, you can get what you want from it, you know, financially if you wanted to somewhere down the road, but just starting out, no, you do it because you're passionate about making a difference in the community.
Yeah, but Paul, isn't there provision made for professionals who are part of the board of directors? They can write that off as in-kind service, can't they?
Yes, they can. And when you write it,
you write them a check, but they can get credit from
IRS. Correct. Yes, they can get credit
for so many hours, right?
For hours, they can get credit for the mileage when they go attend the meetings. And of course, again, the members of the board of directors, their primary objective, of course, is to lead the organization, number one, and number two, to raise funds, to conduct fundraisers and host different events to help obtain more exposure for the nonprofit and to, again, help it to grow, because the key word is sustainability. You want a nonprofit that's going to be around when you're gone. That's
exactly
the whole idea.
Because the purpose of it is to build a legacy.
It's
and
to build
that's
a legacy.
Why it's always good to put this in your name, because your legacy lives on when you are long gone.
Absolutely. Like you see some community centers, what that represents in many cases is a person who started that particular nonprofit, and it brings people together in the community. Some of them could be more ethnically oriented. It could be the Hispanic Learning Center. It could be the community center. And so, again, they have a very good focus in terms of what they are trying to achieve.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. You know, Paul, I am telling you, although I myself in the past worked for a nonprofit organization, I never view nonprofit in the light that I'm now sitting here listening to you, because you truly present it with such pizzazz and such passion that even the person who is listening that had no intention of being part of a nonprofit, the way you present it leaves such a delicious taste in the listener's mouth that I'm sure everybody's going to want to be a part of this arena now. And I want to thank you for that.
Sure.
We have only 17 minutes remaining in this episode, so I wanted to make you aware of that in case you need to start summarizing your thoughts, because I didn't want you to leave with any important information that's not been told.
Well, Daphne, thank you for that. Pass on
the people
to
in the chat room saying this is great stuff.
Hey, all right. I appreciate it. You know, one of the things that I definitely want to talk to people about is that a lot of people are intimidated, again, by the paperwork, and they're intimidated by the process. And typically, whenever we're intimidated, it's because it's something that we don't know, that we may have a lack of knowledge. Right. So what I like to tell people is just release yourself. Let yourself go. It's going to be okay. If someone else, you look at a nonprofit and you have to say to yourself, if they can do it, so can I. So I want people to overcome their fear of going forward with the process. You know, one of the greatest experiences in life is experience itself. When you go into unknown, when you go into the unknown, you really don't know what to expect. But once you go through, then you know that you can accomplish and achieve something. So that's the beauty of life and experience itself. So I want to tell everyone out there, do not be overwhelmed by the paperwork, and just understand that everything is a process. Of course, I worked on Capitol Hill, and I wrote bills into law for the congressman, Congressman Kennedy. And so paperwork and me really get along. I get it. And I want other people to get it, too, that it's just paper, and you fill out the form, and you mail that form, and then you get the next form, you mail that out. And so I want people to understand the greatest challenge organizations and individuals face when establishing their nonprofit organization is the fact that they don't have all the knowledge that they need to do it. But there are people who have that expertise, and if you subcontract out to them or hire them, they can help you with that process, and that's one less thing you have to think about.
Paul, prior to you joining us this morning,
yes.
I actually used the first hour speaking about attitude.
Yes.
And I am excited now that I did, because it just prepared the listeners for what you're saying now, because the bottom line here is the attitude in which we approach the paperwork.
Yes, yes, and it's all a process. It's all a process. And I learned it. I attended some grant training in Albuquerque, New Mexico, a few years back. And when I look back on that experience, it was more of a reconfirm what I already knew. I already knew a lot of that. And then we have to actually perform exercises, take information with little or no time to understand everything, and we have to put a response to a request for proposal. And a request for proposal is the actual name for a grant. Let's say the Department of Energy wanted a proposal, someone who can actually do that work for them. Or if you had a school system, or if you had mobile oil company, and they want to give out a grant because they want you to accomplish something in the community, well, you would actually respond with a proposal explaining exactly how you would do it. You would do things such as put your name of your board of directors, what is their expertise, a bio for them. You would put in how much it would take to actually operate that program. Then you would come back and say, this is how we're going to execute it, and this is the audience or the niche market that we're actually going to help improve, and these are going to be the results. And I think that's what everyone has to keep in mind, that whenever you're applying for a grant, you're actually solving a problem, and the results are going to be the solution to the problems that you have identified in your response in that proposal.
Wonderful. Paul, are you or any individual allowed to have more than one nonprofit organization?
The answer to that is yes. But they must be separate and distinct, meaning that you can't have two or three really doing the same thing. If you're going to have one that's dealing with transitional housing, then that's transitional housing. If you're going to have another where you're going to be helping domestic violence, people who have experienced domestic violence, then that would be totally another. But instead, you can just have one.
The mission and the vision needs to be different.
It needs to be totally different. And, of course, it has to be reported to the Internal Revenue Service that way also.
Yes.
And actually
what can be crossing borders.
Yes.
We have 12 minutes remaining. Go ahead.
Yes. What I also want to pass on to everyone is that the grant world is a mysterious world. I know there's an organization that goes around, I think, they're like a national grant company.
I went to that, Lord.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
And I happened to attend one of their free seminars just last fall, and I just wanted to listen to what they had to say, and they were offering programs for about $1,000, this, that, another.
Oh, yeah, their manual is $1,000.
Right. And so
I
looked at their documentation, I looked at their paperwork, and then I talked to a few people who had actually attended, and I called them up later because we exchanged business cards, and I said, well, did they help you to get a grant? And they said, no. When I called there, they said they couldn't help me. And I said, well, you spent, $1,000, right? Yeah.
That's
well,
right.
Are they going to give you your money back? Are they going to give you your money back? And they said, no, they're not. And so one of the things I want to let people know is that's why you have to confirm and verify everything, and not let people take advantage of you. We're living right now in a time where scams are just rampant. The economic situation has created what's called a credit service business, CSBs, and there are companies that conduct credit repair. But most of them are scams because no one can go and change your credit report for you or give you a new identity or anything. And these are the things that I'm studying up close and personal because
yes.
I want people to know about this and not to be scammed, because scamming, if they scam you, they'll scam me. And we need to stop
right.
it in its track.
It's not a business for them.
Yes.
They are not about adding value. Paul, you have 10 minutes. I mean, you have 7 minutes.
Great.
Can you please summarize your thoughts?
Sure. I'd love to summarize my thoughts. Well, today, what has actually transpired is that I've given the listeners just a brief synopsis of what the grant world is like. I'm giving it to you from my own personal experience, from my 29 years of experience in major government contracts. I think the largest contract I ever managed was about $3.6 billion. And I also negotiated on behalf of the United States government with countries such as the Netherlands, negotiate in their embassy on behalf of the United States, with Spain, with Singapore, with a lot of foreign countries. So I have a lot of expertise. Of course, I worked on Capitol Hill for a member of Congress when I was still in the Air Force as a major and then promoted to lieutenant colonel. And I've worked in this grant area for quite a few years. I've been trained very well. I'm certified. And other people can also do the same thing. I'm not the only one that can do this. The difference is...
No, but you're a bad brother. We ain't going to switch you for nobody else because you're as good as it gets.
Well, I tell you, I always like to say, if I can do it, anyone can do it. And again, I'm a man a young boy that came out of poverty, and we didn't have anything. And when you start to look at the people that have actually applied for grants, and this is part of my summation. George Bush, the recent president, received a grant for $600 million to help build the Texas Rangers baseball stadium when he was part owner of that. Vice President
Whoa.
Cheney was able to get about $3 billion to help with the company he worked for at the time. So what I'm saying is the people at the top have recognized that when you put a for-profit and combine it with a non-profit, the only thing left to happen is called success and an exponential increase in your revenues. And as a result of that, that's why I use that trend setting with Oprah, with Harpo, and the Angel Network, which she leads and manages, and with Microsoft and with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And so if they are doing it, it must mean something. And what it means is, success leaves tracks.
That's
in
right.
other words, that's if you're in the class and the professor's giving you something that's going to be on a test, it's called a foot stomper. I'm giving people the foot stomper right now.
That's right.
So,
thank you for loving us enough to do that.
Yes. And one of the last things is I want to talk to people as I sum everything up here is I want to talk to them about potential sources for free grant money. The largest site is www.grants.gov, and this is a federal government one-stop. And I'm giving this to people because it's a huge site and you have to register for it, so it's not just something you could go on, apply for a grant, and you get money. It's a process. If you don't have a nonprofit set up, you won't be able to get that money. Then there's also the Chronicle of Philanthropy, and that's philanthropy.com. And then there's something called the Catalog of Federal Domestic Assistance, and that's www.cdfa.gov. And those are just a few of it. And then if you go directly to a government agency, let's say if you go into the Department of Agriculture, for example, and here's what's interesting about Department of Agriculture is they give you fund for building apartments in rural areas in the United States, or they give you grant money. If you live in a find an old house in the countryside, if you go in and fix it up, they will actually give you money to fix that up. So, and that website is www.usda.gov or Department of Education, www.ed.gov. And those are just a few examples of websites where it will show you, it kind of touch and feel what it like, what it looks like, what they ask for. And it will help people to give them an idea of exactly how it's done. I plan to do my goal this year for the Paul Lawrence Vann Foundation is to train 12,000 youth, low-income youth financial literacy. And that's very easy to do nowadays because people would donate a facility to conduct the training, and then I can bring on some other volunteers who have been trained in financial literacy, and we can conduct this. And so 12,000 is not a very large number, but that's the goal for 2009. And I want to encourage other people. The number one way to find out whether you should set up a nonprofit is just do drive in your neighborhood, look in your newspaper, and find out what the problems are, and then establish your nonprofit to fix and resolve that problem. To me, that's the easiest way to find out what the problems are. And then you, of course, would work with some local officials, such as the mayor, governor, the Congress, members of Congress. So those are just some of the things that you can look at doing.
Wonderful, wonderful. Would you, again, you have 2 minutes, please,
sure.
From people who probably just joined us at the tail end, remind
sure.
them of your contact information, please. And before we go out of time, I just want to thank you for so generously giving up your time and the knowledge that you have acquired over the years. And we don't take that lightly because it shows us that you love us and that you want to make a difference in the things that we do. And we greatly appreciate that.
Absolutely. And thank you, Daphne, for your wonderful show, A New Day Show. I always give you that, show you that support because you have an outstanding show as well as a lot of people who are listening in. My contact information, again, my website is www.paullawrencevan.com. My phone number is area code 240-416-5077, and my email is paulvann2@comcast.net. And if you look on my website, you'll see I'm doing a teleseminar this weekend. I don't know. I'm not really charging that much, just enough to ship out the home study program and things like that to people who want to get started and establish that nonprofit. But again, Daphne, you have a wonderful show. I'm honored to be a guest on your show today, and I'm honored to also have had the people who are listening in on the line, D.A. Williams and other guests, listeners who are on the line, and thank you all for the great work that you do. And, of course, Daphne, you know that you and I are great friends. We're not good friends. We're great friends. So I look forward to doing it again soon and to having you back on my show as well.
Thank you so much, Paul, for, you know, just empowering us this morning in the way that you have done. And I want to just encourage you to stay focused and just keep doing God's work. I love you, my brother.
Same here, my sister. You have a wonderful day, and thank you once again.
You are very welcome. And, of course, we had our esteemed guest, Mr. Paul Lawrence Vann, who just came on this morning and proved to us that we do not have to settle for mediocrity because we have the power and the ability to create excellence. I want to also...
What's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart? Thank you.
grab it in your spirit and say this. Thank you for showing me and directing me. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I dare you to declare it. Tell the Lord thank you for showing me. Hallelujah. And directing me. Speak to it. My destiny. Come on, you declare it to the Lord. Thank you, Jesus. I speak purpose tonight. Hallelujah. You will open that business and direct it. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I know what I'm here for. Tell the Lord, thank you. Hallelujah. For every trial that came with this lady. Hallelujah. For every struggle that came with this lady. I'm mighty grateful. I said I'm mighty grateful.
Showing me,
I can sense my way.